Denver Gabriel program. You are cleared for departure. Have a good flight.
The Christopher Gabriel program begins now.
Your 50,000 watt sports leader in Fresno, the Central Valley, and for new listeners wondering, wait a minute, thought he was on in the afternoon. 940 ESPN, 940 ESPN Fresno.com. Your 2-hour morning tour begins right now, 6 minutes, 3 seconds past the hour of 7 a.m. Pacific Daylight Saving Time. I am the host of this program and none other that I am aware of, Christopher Gabriel. Delighted to be with you. The sun slowly finding its way up over the Sierra Nevada range. Crisp morning, 49 degrees when I came in, going up to a high today of, I'm not sure, but it won't be that warm. We like it that way. Producer of the program, he'd like it warmer, Jose Gonzalez. We call him Gonzo. Good morning to you.
Good morning, and 100% true. I would like it warmer.
No doubt about it. It is Retro Bumper Friday. Today is the host's choice, so I have made that selection, and Mr. G has uploaded various bumper songs to amaze you, and we'll take you back a little bit. This particular band was really big in the late 70s and throughout the 80s, and then their lead guy went off on his own and had a great career as well. You want to weigh in during the program, you can do that, 844-940-3776. Follow me on Twitter. Hope you do, at CG Program. You can follow Gonzo at
JLGonzo21.
Mm-hmm. Podcast, you can find him, for better or for worse, every minute of this program and every program here on 940 ESPN. You can find them at 940ESPNFresno.com. Go to the website. You'll see the podcast tab. Don't be reckless. Don't just go over there and click on it, Gonzo. Please tell them what they do.
Hover.
Want to hover. Want to hover, baby. Want to hover, and you're going to get the drop down. It's like magic. It just rolls right down. You can listen to every single show because most of us have a little bit more time on our hands. That's nothing wrong with doing that. You can email the program. We read them all. We try to respond to as many as we can. CGP at 940ESPNFresno.com. On the program this morning, in a couple of minutes, we'll check in with the boys, Nick Papagni and Matt Johnson. They have got the high school beat covered like an umbrella over the Central Valley. We'll find out what's going on, you know, what they're hearing from coaches, athletic directors, and what have you. Nick and Matt joining us in about 7 or 8 minutes. Today's encore, Kate Scott. Of course, Fresno native, went to high school in Clovis and has done exceptionally well. She's broadcast NFL games on radio. She did the National Hockey League's broadcast of the Blues and the Blackhawks from the United Center in Chicago, does Pac-12. She's a podcast host. She does a little bit of everything, and she's a terrific young lady and really, really talented at what she does. Trey Wallace, our good friend from Fox Sports Knoxville, will check in with us live from Knoxville. Want to get the read on what's going on out there. As I said to you, we check in with local folks all through the week. We had an all Fresno day yesterday, but we check in with folks all through the week, locally, regionally. We want to find out how folks are doing nationally, see what's up in their areas as we deal not only with this health crisis, but we also are trying to see how other people are keeping a semblance of normal life every day, because still got to do that. I walked into our friend's studio down the hall and around a couple of corners, our sister station, New Rock 104.1. I walked in and I saw two cases of water and two cases of toilet paper. And I thought, boy, don't announce that You know, now that I have a, you're gonna get a line out the door.
Yeah,
trying to get a hold of that. And then 8:35, as we always do, Nick Shager, elite film critic, exclusive to this program, Variety, Daily Beast, Yahoo Movies, and Esquire. You might think there's nothing to talk about. Oh, there certainly are plenty of things to talk about. Nick Shager, in Nick Shager's world, there are always things to talk about. Thing that's on my mind this morning was seeing that, you know, of course, yesterday we talked about Todd Gurley being released from the Rams. This coming a couple of years after they ripped up his contract, they give him a brand new 4-year contract extension, massive money, huge running back money, and obviously Ezekiel Elliott saw that, took, you know, and decided to go that same route. Not much, you know, about a year or so, whatever it was later. I guess it was last year when the whole Ezekiel Elliott deal, but. The Rams would have had to pay him, what, $10.3 million today? Something like that?
Something close to that, yeah.
And as it turns out, the Rams are still going to pay about $7 million of his contract, but he goes to the Atlanta Falcons. Of course, he played his college ball just up the road, literally up the road about a half an hour or so in Athens, Georgia, at Sanford Stadium between the hedges for the Georgia Bulldogs. And I think when you look at the pieces on the Falcons, that's a nice addition for them, and it's easy to forget. Yeah, he's had his health issues, but it's easy to forget the young man's only 25 years old.
Yeah, it is easy to forget, and the Falcons just them themselves cutting their running back, Devontae Freeman,
yeah.
And so this is a really good addition. This is someone that if he can kind of stay healthy, stay on the field, he will be a guy that changes that Atlanta offense, and Julio Jones will probably get a lot more open.
Yeah, you know, you and I were talking just in the most pedestrian ways yesterday about what will happen additionally for Tom Brady this year, if he gets some protection, which I'm going to guess he will. He's got better. It's hard to imagine that he's got better weapons at Tampa Bay than New England. But I think a lot of us have just sort of, you know, we've thought of New England in a certain way that this is just a perennial Super Bowl powerhouse. But last year, you know, no Gronk, no running game, not much of an offensive line. They weren't the team that they had been. So we thought, well, he's going to go somewhere. Sure, it's going to be like San Francisco. It's going to be like Tennessee. No, it wasn't that. It was Tampa Bay. But you start to look at that, at this team, and you realize they were 7-9, but maybe with Tom Brady, that changes everything, because that's going to force defenses into doing very different things against Tampa Bay. And then you look at what they will be able to do with their weapons outside, with their play action pass. The reason I mention that is because now you look at what's going to happen with the Falcons, with Gurley back there and with Julio Jones. He presents an added degree of difficulty for defenses. That's going to open everything up for that offense.
That NFC South is going to be really interesting to watch coming up this next season. And not only that, but CG, something that I would like to point out for a lot of people, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers were going to beat the San Francisco 49ers. They should have beaten the San Francisco 49ers early on last year. If Tom Brady's a quarterback, he doesn't throw all those interceptions Jameis Winston throws to keep the 49ers in this game.
There's no question about it. And I mean, initially when I looked at the Tampa Bay roster and saw what they did last year, and you know they scored a lot of points, but they gave up a lot of points. I mean, they dropped 458 on teams, but they gave up 449. Not too good. That you look at them and you think, well, how much of a turnaround can Tom Brady really make for them? And he's, as Marty Lent said the other day, and I agree with him, Tom Brady alone is probably worth 3 or 4 more wins. They've got an intriguing schedule. But I 3 or 4 more wins suddenly takes them to a playoff team. So that suddenly takes them to 10-6 or 11-5. And as you look at this a little bit more, you're right. That NFC South is going to be something. It's going to be really fun to watch those games with Breeze and Brady twice. I mean, just the Falcons, Carolina with Teddy Bridgewater. It's going to be really interesting to see how this whole league, how that division shapes up.
And this is a make or break year for the Atlanta Falcons with Matt Ryan as their quarterback, Julio Jones getting one more year. This is the year that the Falcons need to do something.
Yeah, and you know, you mentioned Matt Ryan, and there's a guy who I think we probably take him to. We already look at him as a great quarterback, or he has had greatness in his career. And had they not blown that 28-3 lead, we would have him elevated as one of the best three or four. I really believe one of the best three or four in the National Football League. But because of that, that held him down in ways I think similar. And I'm not saying that he's in the class of Elway, but I think that we would have elevated him more had the Falcons won that game.
Yeah, I think we'd see him very differently as a quarterback.
Yep, no doubt. All right, coming up, we're going to talk for a couple of minutes with our friends who run The Rye Show. They're the hosts of The Rye Show, Nick Papagni and Matt Johnson. That's on Thursdays at 12 to 2. And then there's a combination. It's kind of a roulette wheel. Of course, Nick Papagni hosts The Zone on Fridays 4 to 6 with Nick Anderson. Sometimes Matt Johnson's there. And sometimes all three of them are there. Sometimes Nick and Nick are there. Sometimes Matt and Nick are there. You never really know. You never know what you're getting. But we are getting them in a couple of minutes. Stay with us. It is Friday. It is the CGP.
You're listening to the Christopher Gabriel Program on 940 ESPN. More of the Christopher Gabriel Program right now on 940 ESPN.
Retro Bumper Friday, house band Commodores. I remember seeing them at the Long Beach Arena. I don't know if it's still called that, but I remember seeing them. They came out. Well, they didn't come out. They lifted. They got airlifted, essentially. It was one of the deals where the stage was on compressors, and it just came up. And they all looked like they just got off the Battlestar Galactica in their outfits. And then they just played the hell out of 3 hours. It was phenomenal. I told you a moment ago, the boys on Thursday, Matt Johnson, Nick Papagni. On Friday, it's Nick Papagni, Nick Anderson. Might be Matt Johnson, might not. This morning, we have Nick and Matt. Gentlemen, good morning to you both.
Good morning.
Good morning, Central Valley. And yes, today it will be Nick and Matt.
Indeed.
The other Nick is on location.
He's on assignment. He's on assignment
this morning.
Let me start with Matt. Matt, you're out in Madera. You're coaching track. You're not coaching track right now. What is your sense of the people that you've talked to, coaches and what have you, about what's going on and kind of just the general feel and mood that everybody has in all the high school folks that you talk to?
Well, the general mood is upbeat, frustrated, but upbeat, almost comical. When you talk with other PE instructors and other teachers around in my circle, they understand the gravity of the situation, but it's really it's like sitting in on a comedy routine everywhere we go. We're all kind of in disbelief. There is frustration, but we're going to hopefully sit tight because we've got to get back to work. I mean, the young kids, we're doing everything we can to help them, help the families out. But eventually, hopefully in short order, we all get back to work and focus, obviously, on our senior citizens and those that are going to be most affected by this. But at some point, we've got to get back to doing what we do. And I think that's the risk assessment, CG, is we're all making in our own minds, okay, we're all going to eventually get this virus. I mean, it's like catching the cold or the flu. It's going to not necessarily go away. We're just trying to help that little curve a little bit to where it can settle down to where we don't get hit with mass sickness in all the hospital rooms and all that. But hopefully in short order we can get this back, because teachers, educators, everybody, classified workers, we all want to get back to work and continue to do the work that we do to help youngsters.
Yeah, those two words are key, risk assessment. And I think what's interesting about that, fellas, is that is what seems to evolve, not by the day, but by the hour, that we're all just trying to figure out this gap of here's how we think we see it. Here's where we're at. Where are we going to meet in the middle here? Nick Papagni, obviously, you call so many games. Have you had a chance to talk with high school athletes and just kind of get the sense of where their heads are at? Because so many seniors lost their spring season, and some of them will go on to play college sports. Still, some of them will go on to intramurals, but the one thing that binds them all together is that they lost their spring semester.
Yeah, like Matt said, they're very, very confused. You're trying to tell me I can't go out and play baseball in the afternoon with my team? I can't go throw the ball around? That's what's confusing. Just, I'm in the sense, let them go practice at least, because Jim Crixlow and the CAF office, the ADs, they all want to try to get back. So they're going to have a meeting around the first part of April. So there is still hope out there for the high school world that this thing could get going. But, you know, when you have the governor come out and shutting down the world now, it could be doubtful. So it's just to stay tuned. But there is hope still.
You know, we're talking with Nick Papagni, better known as Pag Meter, and Matt Johnson, better known as Matt Johnson, or Maddie. Matt, you know, to dovetail off of what of what Nick said, and I've said this on my program, and maybe you've heard it. I think one of the things that we've dealt with, a reality of this, is that, and I said this as it started to happen, but I certainly wasn't the only one, that it was going to take one league. It turned out it was the Ivy League when they shut everything down. And then we said that it was going to be – pretty much everybody knew it was going to be the NBA. And the position that every sports league was in, and I think you would agree, is that if you ended up being the last man or last woman standing, you were going to be frowned upon. And you knew that once one domino fell, they all had to fall.
That's exactly right. I mean, we live in such a – not just global economy, but global media market, to where we know everything that's going on everywhere at any minute. And once, as you said, it started to kind of trickle into this guy, and then the first NBA player got sick, and then next thing you know, everybody was falling in order, which I think, obviously, I don't think. I mean, I can only trust certain avenues, and when our entire World Health Organization and others are telling us what to do, we have to follow that. The only thing that really hurts is that I'm now doing every bit of research, more than I ever did when I was at USC in college. I'm writing a freaking final paper, it seems like, every night, and researching. And it just seems to me that eventually it's out now. We're all going to get sick. We're all going to catch elements of this. And the people that are most danger, obviously, are those with pre-existing conditions, lack of immunities, and, of course, our senior citizens and older people. So, obviously, they need to be very diligent, careful, and do the youngsters and not be selfish, the young high school athletes and all that. They have to fall in line so they don't go out and get somebody that does have those conditions that could actually be really harmed over this. But eventually, we have to weigh what's going to happen with our economy, and what's going to that is a death nail in itself. If the economy goes so bad, what are we going to look like as a country, as a world, if we allow it to get to that point? So right now, everybody's digging in, everyone's sacrificing, but at some point we have to really look at the reality of this. We're all probably going to, the numbers I'm reading, we're all eventually going to get sick over this. It's just a matter of making sure we take care of those most vulnerable. And how do we do that? Right now, it's everyone stay at home, everyone stay away, social awareness of your surroundings and all that. But eventually, what's the end game on this? Because I can't imagine these young kids that I have to coach and the younger kids that are in elementary and kindergarten, how are they going to sit around through the summer? We got to get this thing figured out, hopefully in a hurry. And I'm counting, as what Nick said, sometime in the beginning of April, we should start getting a better understanding of what's going to happen.
Well, I'm a big believer in, you know, in the time that I've been on this planet and looking at our history books and seeing what this country has done in wars, in disease, in natural disasters, is we have one thing figured out better than anybody on the planet, and that's how to lean on each other and get through things.
Yes.
And we do that great. And what I'm starting to see is more and more people, you know, just a little bit more kindness, a little bit more grace. And a lot of times we forget that in this society, in our day-to-day lives. But I think as the reality of the situation settles in, I think we start to make more progress by remembering that we are in this together. Now, before I let you both go, listen, Matt, you and I have never talked about this. We both went to USC. I got to know. Yes. I lived my first year there. I was on Trojan Third Floor North, and then I was Webb Tower. Were you at Residence West?
Res West, yeah. Which I think they changed the name now.
Yes.
But that dorm was where they housed primarily, you know, my suite, all the athletes and rest of the student body.
Yep.
My suite mates were, of course, I roomed with Sean Salisbury, my best friend in college and the godfather to my kids. But across the way was Jack Del Rio and a linebacker by the name of Neil Hope. We know about Jack Del Rio. across the way, just right of my door in our suite, as you know, was a little baseball group. One was the name of Randy Johnson, and the other guy was Mark McGuire. And they became real, real close, obviously friends of mine. And we know all the best inner secrets of how we like to operate. So it was a lot of fun. Res West was an absolute blast to be in. And a lot of great friendships were developed in those tight quarters roommates in a dorm room.
The two football guys that were my buddies when I was at SC were Anthony Munoz and Ronnie Lott.
Might have heard of them.
Magny. And the thing about Ronnie that always got me, Matt, and Nick, forgive us for a little Trojan talk here for a moment.
Matt doesn't want to brag, but he's the one who helped develop Cheryl Miller's inside game. My sources
tell me that that's quite correct. The thing about Ronnie that always got me is that to this day, I have never seen a defensive back hit like him. Never. I mean, in college, he would just, as you would remember, he'd just destroy people. But, man, when you'd meet him, you'd run into him on campus, he was the most gentle, soft-spoken, warm, gracious, kind-hearted person. It was almost too much to believe when you would see him on the field after you saw him on campus.
Yeah, you nailed it. I know so many people outside of the world of football that have been with me or have talked about some of those legends, and Anthony Munoz, Ronnie Lott, and every one of them, when they talk about Ronnie, hey, Coach Johnson, I saw Ronnie Lott. He's not even anywhere near as big as I thought he would be.
Yeah.
There's no way he was that tough. Oh, no. They all have painted this picture that Ronnie Lott was a 6'4", 400-pound gorilla. Yeah. And in reality, he's just a nice, good size. I mean, not tiny, but not the person you think when you see up front, close and personal like you and I have, but also when you hear the legend of Ronnie Lott.
Yeah.
So he is. He's Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, there's no doubt.
No doubt. And Nick, Pagmeter, tell us what's on the show today.
Well, we're going to have some student athletes of the week. We're going to dig down again with keeping everyone a little light about this, because I think in 2 weeks people are going to lose their minds, and so we want to try to keep them going, give them a little hope out there, and that's what we do. We're going to have to keep that going and try to keep the student athletes excited about the spring, because like Matt said, these guys want to know what's going on, and the ladies out there, and the girls, and all and everyone, because it's a tough time, but a lot of people are confused. Is it an overkill? I personally think it is, but I get hammered a lot saying that. But I think we got to use common sense and work together. We'll figure this out.
Well, we will, and we just want folks to stay tuned to the 50,000-watt monster here. You've got Tony D, you've got myself, you've got the boys I'm talking to, you've got Pagmeter and Nick Anderson or Matt Johnson. 4 to 6 is the zone, and then on Thursdays, 12.
CG.
Yes, sir.
I just want to say one last thing, too, to all the teachers and all of the classified employees and the administration of all the great school districts around our valley. Keep up the great work, because you're absolutely right. We're all sticking together. We're going to make home visits where we can. We're trying to help the youngsters continue to push through this stressful time. And as you said, in the true spirit of America, those people in the education business, hats off to them for continuing the great work they do, to even in these tough times, to invent new ways to reach out to the young kids out there that need us desperately. And so I appreciate the heck out of everybody in that business.
I want to add one real I know we're running late here, but I want to add one thing. Gene Taylor is a friend of mine, the athletic director at Kansas State. I worked with Gene. Well, Gene came on my show when I was back in Fargo. Gene tweeted this yesterday, and it's a perfect follow-up and a button on this to what you just said, Matt. Gene said this: my hope is the next time there's an opportunity to support an increase in teacher salaries with what's going on now with everyone having their kids at home, that we all appreciate what teachers do for our youth and support that effort for an increase. I couldn't agree with that more.
Hallelujah.
Absolutely. Fellas, have a great show this afternoon. We'll check in next week.
Sounds good.
You bet.
All right, there
Thanks,
you go.
G.
Absolutely. Matt Johnson and Nick Papagni, Pagmeter. Coming up, our Encore of the Week, Ms. Kate Scott. This is the CGP.
You're listening to the Christopher Gabriel Program on 940 ESPN and 940ESPNFresno.com. More of the Christopher Gabriel Program right now on 940 ESPN.
It's Retro Bumper Friday. Commodores, house band, we love them, Lionel Richie, before he went off on his own. It is our encore of the week. Had a chance to have a wonderful conversation with a multi-talented journalist, broadcast journalist up in the Bay Area. She's a Fresnan, went to school in Clovis, went to college at Cal, Ms. Kate Scott. A far-reaching conversation with Kate, and here it is. I tell you all the time that there are always some folks out there, whether they are an athlete, whether they are in the media side, who are on my wish list because I love the work they do, and I especially love the journey that they had to get where they're at. And Ms. Kate Scott is right in that A group. She is a play-by-play voice. She's an anchor. She's a host on the Pac-12 Network. She's a reporter. The woman was probably in the NASA astronaut program. She does it all. She's the host of the Update podcast on The Athletic San Francisco. It is a pleasure to welcome Kate Scott to the program. How are you, Kate?
Oh, Christopher, after an intro like that, I'm doing great. Just home, hanging out, self-isolating. How are you doing today?
You know, I've self-isolated in the studio, and it's, you know, that's because I wiped it all down yesterday with the 91% alcohol. It's hospital-like, you know, and it is also CDC compliant. So I'm right there with you. I want to read a quote of yours. This was written by Scott King from NBC Sports Chicago, and this seems to be a good starting point. This is what Kate said to NBC Sports Chicago. It really inspires young kids when they see people who look like them and sound like them doing something that really, for a lot of people, is the first time that they think to themselves, wow, maybe that's something that I can do. And I wrote you an email earlier, Kate, and I said that I want us to get past the point collectively in our world of sports where we are highlighting somebody like you who is incredibly talented, and it just happens that you are a woman. I hope we get past that point where it's just we're talking about Kate Scott, the great broadcaster. But until then, you're in a unique position where you can be a role model for both young women and also a role model of a different sort for young men.
Well, that's the hope, and thank you so much for saying that, Christopher. And I hope that we get there, too. As he said, we've been corresponding over email, which I know makes great radio on afternoons like this. But that's the hope as well, and that's why I struggle so much and always kind of roll my eyes and wish I could have done better when people ask me what it's like to be the first to, you know, call an NHL hockey game here in the States or the first to broadcast a football game on the Pac-12 network, because I really don't want to talk about those things. I hope that pretty soon we'll get to the point where it's just like you said, because I was in a position where I've worked my tail off and the people I work for want me to take that next step, and that just is the presumptive next step. And if it inspires young women and men along the way, that is great. But as you mentioned, that has never been my goal in my career. My goal continues to be to this day to just improve and get better and keep challenging myself and to be ready for the next scary opportunity that presents itself.
No, that's very, very well said. Kate Scott, multi-talented, very versatile broadcaster based in the Bay Area, is my guest. So you're from this area and you're a Fresnan. Mm-hmm. I'm not, so you're much more one of us than I'm one of us. And you grew up in Clovis. Sources tell me that you were a big Fresno Falcons fan, and I love that because I grew up with my mom and dad standing up in the third deck of Chicago Stadium, the original Madhouse
yes.
on Madison, for Blackhawks games. Tell me about your upbringing with the Falcons.
Oh, it was so much fun. And it works out when things come full circle, doesn't it? I was lucky enough to have some of the pictures from my Falcons fan days to be able to tweet out and share on social media before the Blues and Blackhawks game a couple weekends ago. But it was just weekend fun. And we all know minor league sports are some of the best because they're affordable, which so few sports are these days. So my dad and I, whenever we could, would head down to the Celland Arena and, you know, he would get a cheap beer or three. I wasn't keeping track when I was 7, 8, 9 years old. I was just excited to be at a sporting event with my dad. It was a different time in so many ways, right? It was a lot safer, so we would be a couple of decks up in the cheap seats, and he would say, okay, first period's over. As long as I can see, as long as you got eyes on me up here, head down. The guys would walk off in a place where we could high-five them and say hi to them. And after I started going for a couple of years, as I said in a couple of the articles that were so kindly written about me in the lead-up to the NHL game a couple of weeks ago, the guys all of a sudden were going, Who's this girl with all these young boys? There's this girl who knows all of our names. She seems to know the right questions to ask and saying the right things. So after a while, I would start to come home with pucks and sticks, and my mom would look at me just like I was crazy. What are you going to do with a puck and a stick in your bedroom? But it sure looked cool on the wall, didn't it? So that was my first foray into hockey, and I still distinctly remember the Sharks launched when I was just getting into my teenage years, and they played one of, if not their first exhibition at Celent Arena in Fresno with the Los Angeles Kings, and my dad and I were there, of course, and I was this crazy of a sports fan, Christopher, that Kelly Rudy wasn't playing in the game, but he was a longtime goaltender for the Kings. I recognized him out of his jersey and his pads and his mask and everything. Went over to him, asked him to sign my program, and he chuckled too, looking at this, you know, 11, 12-year-old girl. How the heck did you know who I was and how to pronounce my name correctly? Signed my program. My dad chuckled about it too. He didn't know who the heck he was. So that was kind of where it all began. And what do you know that it would come full circle all these years later?
Yeah, and if you're not familiar with Kelly Rudy, his last name begins with, of course, the letter H. So.
Of course. As Rudy would.
Absolutely. We are talking with the very talented Kate Scott, based up in the Bay Area. She does a little bit of everything. I love your journey, and you got to Cal from high school. Well, of course you got to Cal from high school. You didn't get there from grade school.
Yes.
But you made an interesting transition because there was a point that you wanted to be a teacher. How did you find your way into the idea of maybe I should do something a little different?
Yep, and I thought – literally until after I'd applied to colleges that I was going to be a teacher. My mom, special education teacher and aide for my whole life, one of my heroes. Love you, Mom. I know she and my pop are tuning in today.
Great.
Since they're still living in Clovis. A bunch of my friends wanted to go into teaching, and I just thought it was such a wonderful profession, and still do, right? You get to impact people just by being who you are and really, you know, hopefully pointing them in the right direction like so many of my teachers did over the years. So I still distinctly remember I'm walking to the office at Clovis High School, which is where I went to high school, run into our activities director at the time, Mr. Ed Schmalzel, dear friend of mine still to this day, and he asks me, hey, Kate, I know you're applying to schools. What do you think you're going to do? And I told him I wanted to teach, and like he always did, was always very honest with me, said, Kate, I obviously think that's a wonderful idea. I have worked in education and love it for a long time, but have you ever thought about sports broadcasting? And I looked at him like he was crazy, like he had three eyes. Mr. Schmalzel, what? Sports broadcasting? And he said, well, let me just reflect something to you. You play every sport we have. When you're not playing a sport, you're the PA announcer or leading cheers at those sports. You write sports for the high school newspaper. You do sports on our morning announcements. Have you not put two and two together? And I just started laughing and said, actually, no, because, and this is the crazy part, right? It's only been, I graduated from Clovis High in 2001, so it's not even been 20 years. But even then, I saw Linda Cohn and Robin Roberts on SportsCenter. I saw Hannah Storm, Bonnie Bernstein, Michelle Tafoya a little bit doing sidelines or ESPN2, but kind of off the beaten path stuff. And it just didn't occur to me, getting back to the quote you started this whole thing with, I didn't see enough people who looked like me and sounded like me to even consider it a career. So thank goodness Mr. Schmalzel smacked me verbally in the head with that, because that was literally the first time when I was getting ready to go to college that I thought, maybe I could do this for a career.
Well, that's a beautifully laid out journey. And it's interesting because I remember back when I was living in New York City, I mean, I remember the first WFAN broadcast when Susan Waldman brought things out there. And then, of course, all of her years as a broadcaster doing stuff with the Yankees. And you're just furthering that. We're talking with the great Kate Scott, based up in the Bay Area, Fresno native, Clovis High School. So my first time actually hosting a show, I was the co-host and the producer of Andrew Zimmern, as in Bizarre Foods Travel Channel. I was his producer and co-host back in Minneapolis. And the very first time that I got to do a program, I was all so cocky and sure of myself. So I've got the headphones on and the red light comes on and I just sat there, Kate. I just sat there and the producer who was filling in said,
you have to talk now.
And so to weave that into you, when your first time, whenever it was, whether it was a college football game, whether it was the 49ers or something about Cal, whatever it was, your first time calling a game, what were you feeling as you had the headset on and you know it was a go?
Oh, my goodness. I was probably thinking what you were thinking, but I was lucky enough to have remembered to talk, which I know so many people don't do. And I've gotten to work with so many analysts over the past couple of years who are just getting into things. And I have to elbow them and say, it's the replay. This is when you have to talk. But I remember thinking, just don't screw up. And if you screw up, make that your last screw up for the day. And then don't do it again. Gosh, I wish I even remember. That's a great question. I can't even remember what my first broadcast was. I think it had to be, oh, yeah. Well, the first play-by-play I ever did was high school football here in the Bay Area. And it was, of course, of all teams. I never throw myself into easy situations. It was a De La Salle football game. And I'm sure most people the Central Valley know the powerhouse that is the De La Salle Spartans up here. But I remember that I was terrified and that I stumbled and bumbled all over the place and that I'm sure that I got names and down and distance wrong. But some of the best advice I got in the first job I had in the broadcasting industry after I graduated from Cal, which was radio traffic producing. I wasn't even on air. I was just typing things into a screen that traffic reporters would read as the accidents on the radio stations here in the Bay. But when I was ready to transition from that into actually being a radio traffic reporter and saying what was going on, the best advice I got was, you're going to mess up. Just try to make that your last mistake. So stumble once, then try not to stumble the rest of the report. If you stumble again, try to make that your last mistake. So I remember thinking that as I was calling that first football broadcast, and it's fun to listen back to because you can tell, right, as the second quarter kind of gets underway, you start to get a little bit better. After halftime, it gets a little bit cleaner. And that's something I still carry with me to this day. Try not to screw up. Make your last mistake, and just keep going. That's all you can do.
Well, Kate, I have a sign, little sign over the studio, and it's all it says is don't suck. We are talking with Kate Scott, and she's just a wonderfully talented, very versatile broadcaster, multimedia broadcaster up in the Bay Area. She's also the host of the Update podcast on The Athletic San Francisco, The Athletic SF. We'll get to that in a moment. And the reason I asked you what I asked you a moment ago is because I wanted that to be the preface to hockey. And I know that according to what I had read, that you hadn't done hockey before. I've only done play-by-play in basketball. I can't imagine hockey. And so you sought out, as far as I'm concerned, the greatest hockey announcer of all time, Doc Emmerich. Mm-hmm. And he said, this is part of what he said to you, and I want you to amplify on it, Kate. He said, I want you to know something. Al Michaels had called one hockey game, period, before he called the Olympics. He called one. But just in the same way that he was then, you are a professional play-by-play announcer. You call all the other sports. You know how to prep. You know exactly what you need to know to be prepared and to sound like a professional on those broadcasts. And I thought, that's great advice. So then, given what we talked about a moment ago, what a remarkable broadcast. You and an all-female broadcast team with some tremendously talented media pros and hockey Olympic gold medal winners. How did you approach that, and what was that whole experience like with the Blackhawks and the Blues from the United Center in Chicago?
Yeah, it was absolutely phenomenal, and it's going to be a night that I will never forget. And I'm so thankful for, as you mentioned, the legend of all legends, Doc Emmerich, to take time out of his schedule. We had that conversation as I was getting prepared to call my first test game. Thank goodness that NBC let me do some test games to get up to the pace and the sight lines of calling an NHL game. And Doc was the one actually calling the game last night. It was that night. It was in Chicago. They were hosting the Bruins. And he's in one of the dressing rooms that we make our green room the day of the game. And he has his board laid out, and he's writing up some notes. And he just calmly told me that in the Doc Emmerich voice. And that gave me so much confidence, hearing the legend of all legends tell me that I could do this and that I was ready for this. And just to use the same preparation that I have when it comes to every other sport and just switch it to hockey. So that's what I did. So I immersed myself in hockey in every moment that I could, because I was also calling basketball during that time. I was also covering the Pac-12, and I got to call some WCC men's this year and some A-10 women's back on the East Coast. So still doing all that. But in every moment that I wasn't doing basketball, I was watching the NHL Network, and I was listening to Sirius NHL Radio. Anytime I was in the car, I had it glued to Channel 91. I favorited on my computer all of the beat reporters for the Blues and the Blackhawks so that I could get into that language, knew who those writers were, knew who they were following and the storylines for both of the clubs, so that I knew who I needed to really ask about when we had a chance to talk to players and the coaches and the GMs and stuff, because the access was incredible. So it got back to what Doc told me. I know how to prep for all the other sports I call, and now this time I just had to transition it to hockey. And I like to say that it's like learning a new language. Every sport is like learning a new language. The first season you cover it, it is trial by fire, and everything feels like it's overwhelming and so new. And then the longer you cover a sport, the more familiar you become with it, and the easier it is to just slightly reset each year, right? There's a couple new players. Some players either graduate or move on or get traded to different teams, but overall, you know the language now. So I was in the trial by fire the last few months with the NHL, but one thing I know for sure, had an absolutely lovely time. I remembered those days of going to Falcons games and how much I love the sport of hockey. So I'm really hoping that this will set the stage for potentially calling some more hockey down the road.
Kate Scott is my guest. Kate, I want to take that and I want to talk about The Update, your podcast, because you do play-by-play. You've been a studio host. You've been a reporter. You've done a lot of different things. You've done traffic. I know that I tell young broadcasting students all the time that when I'm sitting in this studio as a host, it is totally different than when I'm brought on a show as a guest. And you know that as well as anybody. It's a little bit of a different energy, and you're filling in blanks in a different way than you are when you're unfolding a story and you're kind of taking people up that stairway. Now you look at all of your breadth of experience and you're doing The Update. You're doing a podcast. How have you found every piece of your multimedia broadcast journalism work is fitting into that?
Well, I got to tell you, I sure like being on that side of the microphone versus this side of the microphone.
Oh, you're great.
I'm still getting used to being the interviewee versus the interviewer. But that is where I feel the most comfortable, because that's why I got onto this in the first place. I love hearing and helping tell, just like you do, I know, other people's stories, because yeah. I find other people so much more fascinating than me. So it has been so cool, and I'm really excited, actually, about how things have changed the last couple of weeks and the potential for the Update podcast moving forward. Because when we launched it, Tim Kawakami, who's a writer up here in the Bay,
he's great,
approached me a year ago. It was last March, and he said, "Kate, I don't know if you listen to the New York Times The Daily, but it's newsy, but it's usually not what happened the night before. It's just kind of general storytelling to get people more in-depth on particular stories than they would if they were just, you know, listening to sports radio, because a lot of what you do is reaction, and I remember that from my years at KNBR. But we'd love for you to dig deeper, and we think you'd be the perfect voice for this since you've covered all of our teams in the Bay Area and just kind of, as you mentioned, have a breadth of knowledge that maybe other people haven't been lucky enough to acquire. So we've been able to dive into some storytelling, and there's some episodes that we did that I'm really proud of. We got to do Kyle Shanahan's story, not really his coaching story, but all the stuff before. Matt Barrows did a great interview with Kyle's mom, and we had some of the sound from that, and I didn't know Kyle Shanahan was a champion swimmer before he got into football, right? Like, who knew that? So he still has records where he grew up, so that was one of our stories. We dove into the Katie Sauer story. Obviously, Katie was a trailblazer recently with the 49ers in the Super Bowl for her gender and her sexuality, and did a really long interview with her mom, Bonnie, because, you know, sometimes the best stories come from the parents,
yes,
who have just a slightly different perspective and maybe are willing to tell a little bit more than their kids haven't been able to. So we had Bonnie on a couple weeks ago. That was wonderful. And there was a wonderful hot dog vendor in the Bay Area, Jimmy the Hot Dog Guy, who passed away unexpectedly back in December. And Alex Coffey, our A's beat writer for The Athletic up here in the Bay, just did a wonderful way of telling Jimmy's story. He sold for the Giants and the A's, and we have tons of sound from Hal the Hot Dog Guy, who sells with Jimmy, and her interviews. So it's been really cool to tell those stories, because to me, I always love cheering for teams, just because they're your team, right? But there's another layer sometimes that makes you appreciate either the people who are selling things to you at the games or coaching or playing in the games. So that's what we're really hoping to do over the next weeks and months. And I'm excited for tomorrow's new episode. It comes out Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And Lisa Seltzer, who directed our broadcast for the Blues and Blackhawks a couple weeks ago, who is just a phenomenal person in the industry. And when it comes to actual Trailblazers, she was doing producing and directing of high-level sports broadcasts when no other women were in the truck. So I'm glad, as I said, that I'm now on this side and that I get to start asking the questions again, because her story is the one that I think everybody should have been telling in the lead-up to the game, not mine and stuff. So looking forward to getting those out and hope folks will listen.
Well, let me close by offering you this, if I may. One of the things that I said on Twitter earlier is that there's a joy that comes through in your work. And if I can borrow from my theater background, I would always tell folks that when you go to the theater, sometimes the greatest characters were the villains, because, and especially in Shakespeare, because they give you a reason to root for them. You watch Iago in Othello, and he's the most vicious character Shakespeare ever wrote, but if he's played the right way, in quotes, you're going to root for him. And what you do in your work, Kate, is you give us a reason to root for a game that we might not be interested in. You bring that, and it's so appealing. And as somebody who is a storyteller over stats, that's what you do exceptionally well. And that's why I love your work. That's why I'm glad you came on the program today. And that's why I hope you'll come back.
Well, after saying wonderful things like that, of course I'm going to come back. And thank you so much for saying that, Christopher, because that's always my hope. And that's one of the reasons I love play-by-play, because it's not about me. I'm just trying my best to amplify the student athletes or the professional athletes or the atmosphere or the game. And that's what I love to do, as you said, when it comes to either the podcast or any of my other jobs, to just shine that light on everybody else who is so deserving of it. So thanks so much for having me on. Can't wait to hear Jill. So glad you had Dan on. I mean, it's just a great show. I love what you're doing. And yes, can't wait to be back on again soon.
The Christopher Gabriel Program on 940 ESPN. From the studios of 940 ESPN in Fresno, California, this is the Christopher Gabriel Program.
Hour number two, CGP, on a beautiful morning in the Central Valley as the sun peaks over the Sierra Nevada range just to the east of us, begins right now. 3 minutes, 37 seconds past the hour of 8 a.m. Pacific Daylight Saving Time. You know, We said this at the top of the program, I'll say it now once again, that we have a great, we'll call it a roster of people that come on this program. We have wonderful folks here locally with Fresno State and our media friends in town and then throughout the region. And we have a great group of national folks. And one of those individuals is Trey Wallace. He works for Fox Sports Knoxville. There's a whole bunch of sports talk hosts there who have been there longer than Trey, but none of them are better. That might ruffle some feathers there, and I really couldn't care less. Trey Wallace joins me right now. How are you, my man?
Man, good morning to you. Hope everybody out west is doing okay on this wild week that we've had so far.
It is wild, and we have detailed that in no uncertain terms here. Trey, and one of the things, first of all, how are you doing? Everything okay with you?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm good. Trying to stay busy. I mean, it's an interesting time of year when all this is going on, and you know, it comes at a time where country probably needs to come together a little bit more than we usually are. But you know, the state of Tennessee, we've not locked down anything yet besides the bars. And look, man, if you're going to lock down bars in Nashville, you know this thing is serious.
Yes, so, that's
right. I'm telling you. So in Knoxville, it's been different. It's, you know, all the malls are closed and a lot of restaurants are going dine in and stuff like that. But we haven't had an order like you guys have had out there yet, so I expect that to come soon.
Yeah, I know those. The mall that I would go to when I'd visit Knoxville was the Westtown Mall, and out on Kingston Pike, I believe it is. So yeah, it's life is different right now, and you're right. Trying to stay ahead of that curve, which
you know, it seems to be evolving every hour. And this is normally a very busy time of year for you and myself, or we're talking college basketball. We'd be in day two of March Madness. We've got the NHL, NBA, NFL free agency, the draft coming up in a month, and only one of those things is going on right now. That's the NFL. But how have you been approaching this? I guess we are the voice, obviously, or the voice of Fresno State. We're the flagship. You handle a whole bunch of stuff with the big boys in town, the University of Tennessee. How has that been? How has their approach been with all of this relative? I mean, obviously, spring sports are gone, but what's the vibe there like with Tennessee?
It was a weird week. They had a press conference on campus Tuesday with the athletic director and the spring sport coaches. So, like Rick Barnes and our baseball coach, Tony Vitello, and softball coach and whatnot. But that's the last time, and I was sitting there in this press conference, and the reporters were all 6 feet apart. Like, it was interesting. There were only seven reporters allowed into the press conference, and trying to give everybody a visual of what it is. Usually there's like 31 reporters in this room, but there was like seven. So it was very awkward. But I tell you, it's the weird part about it is, we won't see these people now. We won't hear from these people now. That will be the last press conference that we have for at least 2 months. And I think that really hit me while I was sitting in there. I was like, we're hearing from Philip Fulmer, and we're hearing from all these coaches. And then it kind of hits you. Oh, wait a minute. Okay, it's the last time. We're going to do this for a while. And, that part's been something to get used to, because right now, I'm usually hunkered down with college basketball. It's spring football, going out and covering practices and, trying to find that narrow little line of what to talk about and how to go about your shows. It's a lot harder. So people out there are listening, just don't think that we can just come up and all of a sudden just talking. It takes a lot, And,
yeah.
And we have to come up with these things. And, it's different, Christopher. But I'm starting to get used to it a little bit.
Yeah, we're talking with my good friend Trey Wallace from Fox Sports Knoxville. Does a wonderful job as a host and as a writer. No, you're right about that. And I think, and I'm curious what you and your colleagues, I don't know them personally, but I know who they all are. And I'm wondering what your approach has been, because I know here, our station here, as our audience knows, Trey, and as you know, is a 50,000-watt stick. So, I mean, we our signal goes all the way to the state capital, Sacramento, goes to the Bay Area, to Monterey, and to the Grapevine north of Los Angeles. So we cover a lot of territory here. And because of the situation, we have taken it upon ourselves to realize that we have to broaden what we're doing. We need to be talking with newsmakers and what have you, because that's our responsibility. We are a voice here. What has your approach been at Fox Sports Knoxville in that area relative to the health crisis that we are dealing with nationally and globally?
I still think it's kind of it's been so close to when the SEC basketball tournament was canceled. So you still take calls on how this basketball season would have ended for Tennessee, which I think, it ended in Nashville. It wouldn't have gone any further, maybe the NIT. We were in the beginning of spring football, and you got to realize with this, Tennessee's breaking in a few new coaches,
yeah,
breaking in new quarterbacks. So we've had to curtail things. And I'll say this, we have a great listener base and great callers and people that just want to talk about what's going on in their life and how this has affected them. And I am so open to that. We tell them every day, look, if something's going on, you want to talk about it on air,
that's right,
call in, let's talk about it. Because, we're all in this thing together.
Yep.
And if we can bring people closer, I think that's the main thing as well. And also, look, this is an information-based world. And what we do is, most of the time, we're getting sports news out. I've tried to transition that a little bit where, okay, I'm going to get some news out every day regarding this and try to inform some people. I don't care which political side you're on. This virus really doesn't care. So you you have to put that into perspective and also realize that, you know, I know we're digging for sports, but also there is a global pandemic going on. And if we can inform listeners and let them call in and have a good time as well, playing some games on the radio, stuff like that, then that's what we do. Because you know this and I know this, it's going to be a crazy 2.5, 3 months, 4 months, however long this thing lasts. And, you know, we can't gas out this quick.
Yeah, you mentioned something there that we had some fun with here. I didn't come up with this line, but somebody said, it was a doctor saying that the virus is not a registered voter. And it's such a simple thing, right? But it really is true. I mean, it just doesn't care who you are, if you're red or blue or what, it just doesn't matter. We're talking with Trey Wallace from Fox Sports Knoxville. Let's talk a little bit. You know, we talk Mountain West out here. We talk some Pac-12, but mostly Mountain West. As you looked at the SEC tournament, and one of the things we're going to be starting to do, we did it yesterday, and we're going to do this for the next 2 or 3 weeks, is greatest March Madness moments, giving the audio of great buzzer beaters. Who do you think was going to come out of the SEC tournament this year?
I think I'll say Auburn. I think that Auburn was so run and gun. Look, everybody in the country is going to remember Nolan Richardson and his 40 minutes of hell with Arkansas. I think that's ingrained in folks and how they played back then and won a national title, you know, with Corliss Williams, and I can go on. But that's kind of what Bruce Pearl does with Auburn. He plays a guard-happy type team, and they get up and down the court, and they play one big man, and, you know, it's just a lot of fast-paced running, and they shoot a lot of threes. I mean, they were averaging 33 three-point shots per game, but I think that's a team that they were getting really hot towards the end of the season. And they were good all season, but they were really starting to hit some shots even more, and I think that was a team that could have gone in there and beaten Kentucky. But I will say this, the SEC was very diverse this year. You know, the SEC, you know, you had teams like Texas A&M that came on strong there towards the end. You had teams like Kentucky playing good basketball. Every now and then Florida would. Tennessee would actually play good basketball every now and then. So I think it had been, you know, somebody asked me before going to the tournament. They said, okay, I'll either give you Auburn and Kentucky, or I'll give you the field. Who would you take? And I took the field. And I think that just goes to show you how much things have been spread out this year in the SEC. But I think it would have been Auburn winning it. Kentucky would have got in, probably Texas A&M. But there would have probably only been 3 or 4 SEC teams involved in the tournament this year. And, you know, Tennessee and Rick Barnes would have been playing in the NIT probably Tuesday night, this past Tuesday night, if it was going to go down. And who knows where that season would have gone from there.
Trey, one of the things that we do here, we have a great relationship, obviously, with, I mentioned it earlier, with Fresno State. And
absolutely.
Yeah, and two teams that come to mind here immediately were the Fresno State softball team. They were 21-4. They had already beaten number 3 ranked Texas. They went into extra innings against, at the time, number 17 ranked Michigan. They were tied with number 7 ranked Florida. They nearly beat them, nearly beat Stanford. They lost to them in extra innings. This was a team that looked like they were headed to the College World Series, but that's all for naught. The Fresno State women's basketball team owned the Mountain West but got upset in the final by Boise State, so it was probably the WNIT, maybe an outside shot at an NCAA bid. What has been the effect on seniors and programs at Tennessee? How has that been? How has that played out? Because I think it's important for people here to hear that they may know it, but to hear that this is going on elsewhere as well.
You know, it was tough. I mean, it's tough. I you know, we have Tony Vitello, who is the head baseball coach, on. And I'll say this too. If you're a college baseball fan, get used to the name Tony Vitello, because I don't know how long he's going to be at Tennessee, but he will take over an absolute powerhouse in college baseball sometime in the next 5 years. I think it's been, you know, talking with the coaches and then hearing from a few players, man, it catches them by surprise, man. You work so hard in the off season, and you work so hard, you know, here in East Tennessee, you know, these guys are out there practicing in November and December where it's, you know, 25 degrees and snowing. And then, you know, you want to get to that point where you're playing spring ball and the temperatures are 75 to 80 outside. It's a gorgeous day. You know, Tennessee got 17 baseball games in this year. And I know that might sound like a lot to folks, but it's nothing short of it. I mean, you know, they would have had 19 more to go. And I just think that, you know, you look at it right now for these seniors, and I think the NCAA is going to do the right thing. I think they're going to grant them an extra year. No matter what year you were in, if you were a freshman, you get your freshman year back. You're a sophomore, sophomore year back. I think that's how the NCAA is going to handle this when it comes to spring sports, because these softball teams and these baseball teams, man, they weren't even halfway through their season. And I think you have to do the right thing. And I've become a huge softball fan.
I love softball.
I watch softball. Yeah. I'll watch it on ESPN whenever it's on, the SEC Network, Pac-12 Network, whatever it's on. I enjoy it. And I'd actually heard about the Fresno State team because I was around some Tennessee softball coaches, and they were kind of talking about nationally what was going on. So, you know, your heart goes out to these players, and these are people that you cover. You know, these are student-athletes that you cover every day and talk about. But, man, it really hits home when all of a sudden you're about to play in a series last Thursday. You don't get to play in that, and then come Saturday and Sunday, they're telling you, hey, you're going on spring break, don't return. Don't come back to campus. Your season is done. And, yeah. And I can't imagine the emotions from an 18 to a 21-year-old, how that would be. And that's where it hits, Christopher.
Yeah, you know, it's I'm with you. I'm a huge softball fan. The program here, I had Linda Garza, the head coach, on yesterday. She's she is like a firecracker in terms of energy and emotion. And you have a unique situation there, which I'm guessing most people here aren't familiar with. Tennessee's, they have a husband and wife co-coach arrangement there, and they've been there for quite a while.
Yeah, it's Karen and it's Ralph Weekly, and they are co-head coaches. I mean, I've never seen this before. I've seen where, you know, Kelly Harper, the University of Tennessee head women's basketball coach, her husband is an assistant coach on the team, but it's never, and he's down the line. You never have two head coaches like this, and especially that they're married. It's interesting, you know, I mean, when they have to file their taxes, I'm sure stuff gets a little bit tricky in there, but it makes for an interesting situation, because sometimes you'll have Karen, you know, coaching first base, which a lot of times it is. And then you have Ralph, you know, on third or in the dugout. And, you know, it's just, you don't see that in college athletics, and it's tricky. I can't imagine how late they stay up at night going over lineups, going over how they're going to attack teams. I'm sure dinner dates, you know, they could seem of sitting home and watching tape. So, you know, it's like the new norm. And trust me, they're getting paid hefty to do it. But Tennessee softball, that's one of the bright spots on campus. So it's an interesting little situation, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, it really is. We're talking with our good friend Trey Wallace from Fox Sports Knoxville. We certainly know what's happened here with through the Mountain West Conference. How has it been dealing with the SEC in terms of their flow of information? And have they, since everything that's gone on, are you still getting any updates? Is the commissioner there offering at least to, you know, check in once a week, once every couple of weeks?
Yeah, Greg Sankey, Christopher, you know Greg Sankey. Mm-hmm. You've read some of his stuff, and he's done a really good job as commissioner. We had a teleconference yesterday with him to kind of go over things. We'll see if we have one next week. You know, I'd imagine maybe the week after that, maybe once every 2 weeks type of deal. But he really has been keeping up. You know, we've been getting our emails, our press releases, our statements. And it all started, you know, last Thursday in Nashville, Tennessee, where, you know, I'll take 2 seconds and walk you through this thing real quick. I arrived at the arena at Bridgestone in Nashville around 9:45. The players are there. They're getting taped up. Some of them are warming up. Some of them are shooting around. I see Jordan Bowden out there. You know, they're getting ready to do this thing. Kentucky's on the court shooting in their shoot-around because they played the next day, but they had to give them an hour. So the media, they were like, they were hoarding this right there. Okay, you can't go on the court, you know, the floor yet. Kentucky's still out there shooting around. So right when that, right around 10:30, that would have been Eastern time hit, we got to go on the court. Well, I grab my spot and I look over and I'm sitting right behind the ESPN broadcast area, which would have been Jimmy Dykes and Carl Ravage. And I'm standing there. I'm not unloading anything yet because I see an ESPN producer make a beeline from the tunnel straight to Jimmy Dykes and Carl Ravage. And on the way over there, she makes a slashing of the throat type rhythm, and she said, canceled. And I was like, ah, they just canceled the SEC tournament. And I look over at Bob Kessling, the voice of the Tennessee Vols, and I said, canceled? He goes, yep, we're done. And that's kind of how everybody found out. It did not come down until all the Power Five athletic directors had a conference call that morning 15 minutes before they canceled it. So, you know, it's been a whirlwind ever since. I think these commissioners of these leagues all over, Mountain West, you know, Pac-12, all the way here to the SEC and the ACC, they're trying to have to figure this thing out on the fly, Christopher, because there's never been precedent for it. So that's where I think, you know, they're voicing their support for spring sports eligibility. And winter sports, I don't think it's done. I think that, you know, winter sports, college basketball, you play 95% of your season. The likelihood that you get a year back is, I think, slim to none. And I hate that for these kids. I really do. But I still think it's slim to none. So it's I think the commissioners have done a great job. Philip Fulmer, I'll leave it with this one. Philip Fulmer said on Tuesday he thinks the NCAA could communicate better.
Mm-hmm.
And I completely understand that because Mark Emmert, he's kind of been all over the place over the last week. And I get what he's doing. He's trying to take care of that billion-dollar baby that was the NCAA tournament. But you got a lot of athletic directors and a lot of players relying on his words, and there hasn't been much of that.
No, I think if Mark Emmert ever looked for a new position, he would just fit perfectly as the head of the IOC. You know, that's where I'll leave that. You know, I remember seeing a picture that you posted. We're talking with Trey Wallace from Fox Sports out in Knoxville, Fox Sports Knoxville. I remember seeing the picture of Bridgestone Arena. I think you posted one from behind the basket, and that was surreal because you had a couple of players shooting on the court and the arena was empty. And it was just, you know, this gigantic arena where the Predators play, and it was empty. And I mean, the only thing that was, for me personally, that was more surreal, you know, we heard all of these stories, but then it was driven home by seeing your picture. And then the one that topped everything was, here you are at halftime of the quarterfinals of the Big East, St. John's and Creighton at Madison Square Garden. And they're in the locker rooms and they find out, oh, you're not playing a second half. We just shut this thing down. Can you imagine being one of those players, Trey?
I can't, and it was interesting. So when I got the word that they weren't going to play the SEC tournament, I immediately start walking back to the media workroom to start, you know, writing up a report about what's going on. And as we're walking through the tunnel area, we're stopped, and Kentucky basketball players, Alabama basketball players, Texas A&M, Tennessee had already scooted out the backside of the arena, but they were walking right in front of us, man. Some of them were heads were down. You could see some tears were flowing from some of them. That was when it hit me, like right then. Like, you know, we knew we were going to hear from Greg Sankey that day, and we'd get some answers. But seeing the players so disappointed, these 18 to 21-year-old young men, I think that's when it really hit me that this is such a bigger effect in what's going on. And look, the virus, you know, I'm telling you, this is huge, and people should be paying attention to it and not just overlooking it and just thinking that, hey, this thing's going to end tomorrow, you know. But then I also look at it, this is what we do for a living.
Yes.
We cover these young athletes for a living. You get to know some of these players too. And, you know, I don't know players from Kentucky or Alabama or Texas A&M, but I will say, you know, watching them walk by and carrying their luggage and tears coming down your eyes, it really woke you up a little bit, and you're like, dang, you know, I'm going through this, but imagine a season getting cut off because of all, you know, all the hard work that you put in. It's just ended with a phone call. So that's kind of how my day was at Bridgestone. I wrote my report. I got back on the road, and I got back to Knoxville because I knew more news would be coming down, and surely it did.
Yeah, we were the button on our season here was the remarkable ending, and I'm sure you've seen it. If you haven't, you got to look it up, was the remarkable ending of the Mountain West tournament with Sam Merrill from Utah State hitting about a 29 or 30-foot shot.
It was beautiful.
Yeah, that's just, I mean, and he's an unbelievable player and just a class guy. And, I mean, a lot of folks didn't think that they were going to pull this tournament off, and it didn't seem like they were going to with the kind of year San Diego State had. But for me, that was the button on the season. Listen, Trey, it's great to check in with you. I'm glad you're healthy. I'm glad you're up and doing your thing. And if you ever need anything, just give us a call. But we will definitely check in with you again just to see how things are going out in your neck of the woods in SEC country in beautiful East Tennessee.
Hey, listen, I appreciate it so much. It means a lot. Thanks for always having me on. I love coming on out in California. It's beautiful out there. My best friends are out there. Shout out to all the restaurant workers, movie theater workers, mall workers. You know, I got a best friend of 27 years that lives in Santa Barbara who was laid off the other day from the restaurant industry. And, you know, it's just tough times for everybody. But if we can come together, and if we can somehow just kind of stay positive during this situation, we're all going through hard times, I promise you. But let's just stay together, continue to pray on it if that's what you do. If not, sing a couple songs, have some laughs. I promise you we'll get through this. Just pay attention to everything. Christopher, I appreciate you having me on, buddy. I love you, brother. I hope y'all be safe out there, and we'll talk soon.
Love you right back. Our best to everybody out in East Tennessee, my man. You be safe.
Thanks, buddy.
All
bye-bye.
Right. Trey Wallace, and I echo what he said. We said it in the first hour. Trey said it beautifully. One of the things that we do in our community, certainly here in the Central Valley, and one of the great things we do in this country is we come together. We come together and we deal with tough times. These are very, very different tough times, but we have a lot of smart people working on this, and we have a lot of folks, community to community, city to city, state to state, that will come together, and we will all get through this. For a little lightness to end your week, we will have our good buddy Nick Shager from Daily Beast, Variety, Yahoo Movies, and Esquire join us. Yeah, there's some stuff going on, some cool Netflix series coming your way. He's going to detail it all for you. That's next. This is the CGP.
You're listening to the Christopher Gabriel Program on 940 ESPN. More of the Christopher Gabriel Program right now on 940 ESPN.
It's Retro Bumper Friday. Mm-hmm. Commodores. House band. This was an anthem for a generation. My goodness. Our next guest remembers this song. I sure do. Seeing it live was awesome. Just see it. But they were in their heyday. You know, we close our week the same way with a little lightness, a little coolness, and a little stuff about what's going on the big screen and what's going on the little screen.
There may be no busier film critic, no greater elite movie mind than Nick Shager. He can talk Hollywood, Cannes, Sundance, Fargo, Budapest, Kathmandu. If there's a film to be seen or a film festival to attend, he is on it. Here's Nick Shager.
Yes, indeed. Resplendent in his, well, I'm not sure what uniform he'd be wearing today because there's nothing going on. But there's always something going on, actually, in Nick Shager's world. Mr. Shager, exclusive to this program, Variety, Daily Beast, Yahoo Movies, Esquire. Well, anything new in your world, my friend?
I'm, you know, the usual, just sort of hanging out at home, doing some work in my casual work-at-home clothes, and, you know, trying not to go too crazy reading the news, which is a little difficult these days.
Boy, it really is, and, you know, of course, out here in California, we have the shelter-at-home situation, which, you know, I mean, it sounds awful, but you can still go to the store. You can still go out to your, you know, in your neighborhood and exercise and what have you, and, you know, do your essential things. But there are the list of essentials and non-essentials, and then your neighboring state, New York, they just ordered all employees to keep workers at home except for essential services, and banning gatherings on any size. It's kind of a, I mean, it's a new world that we're living in right now. Hopefully, it's not going to last as long as a lot of us think. But how have you seen this affecting what you do for a living, and that is the film industry?
Well, you know, as you said, around here we're basically in a shelter in place situation, even if they aren't calling it that. And that's how everybody's living, and that's how all the neighboring states here in the tri-state area are responding to it. As for my industry, I mean, I think as everybody knows, excuse me, they've basically sort of stopped releasing new movies into theaters. We are going to, both this week and in the coming weeks, get a few movies that will get some theatrical releases in the parts of the country where movie theaters are still open and running, which certainly isn't around here. But for the most part, we're in a situation now where my industry is focused on things that are coming out on streaming and the movies that are coming out on streaming. You know, today is the beginning of a new paradigm, at least temporarily, where some of the big films of the last few weeks that you and I have discussed, The Invisible Man, The Hunt, the new remake of Emma, have been released on VOD today at a price of $20 a rental because they're still technically theatrical releases. Tonight we're going to get on Disney Plus the new Pixar movie, Onward, which will be available for rent in another week or so. So things are shifting. I don't know where anything is going, but I think that is in line with everyone else's life. We're not exactly sure what next week looks like or the week after, much less outside of that. But I can tell you that when it comes to the movies, the summer movie season is being totally reshaped. I wouldn't expect to see most of those big movies until later this year or, you know, maybe next year.
Do you think, before we talk about a couple of cool things that are coming out, a couple of Netflix series, do you see the potential for how movie studios, how distribution companies are shifting their business model both to continue making money, but as well as serving people that want to see content? Do you think that it might, going forward, once we get through all this, it might shift their model, at least in some capacity, in how they do business?
I think that's certainly the discussion that's going on right now. And there are clearly no definitive answers to how things are going to play out. I think that's going to be determined in some respects by how long this goes on and how long businesses, including theatrical businesses, are affected by this. But as everybody knows, the movie theaters and the theatrical movie industry has been under a strain for the last few years because of the competition from streaming services and Netflix, Amazon, not just with their own original streaming content for television shows, but for movies. I mean, we just had an award season where Netflix was such a big player. And so now, because they have these movies in theaters right now and nobody can go see them, they're starting to release them online. Well, what happens if consumers say, you know, it's actually a great idea and a great deal, and I love it to be able to rent The Invisible Man at home for $20 for 48 hours. $20 is nothing really if you have four people in your household or five people and they can all watch the movie. It's much cheaper than going to the movie. That might, you know, do something in terms of finally shifting things away from movie theaters for all but the biggest event films. But obviously, movie theaters are going to fight that, I'm sure, in various ways. And I'm not 100% sure that's a great thing long term, because going to the movies is a great experience, regardless of how nice it is to have the convenience of things. But certainly, you know, streaming services are in a good position right now just because of the nature of this crisis. But, you know, I would hate to even try to make a definitive prediction at this point.
We're talking with Nick Shager from Variety, Daily Beast, Yahoo Movies, and Esquire. Well, we do have some things to talk about, though. Yet another true crime series from Netflix. This one's called Tiger King. And as I looked this, looked at your notes about this, this is crazy. And the fact this is true?
I can tell you, you know, as you know and as listeners know, I do a lot of true crime stuff week to week. That is one of my, you know, unofficial beats here as a critic. And so I've seen a lot of true crime things. And yet there is, I can't think of a crazier true crime series than Tiger King, which comes out on Netflix today. I recommend everybody who's at home to immediately start watching it. I've been talking it up to my family for days. It is just mind-boggling that this is a true story. The story is about a guy named Joe Exotic, whose name is doesn't even really match the ridiculousness of the actual person. He's a gay, meth using, country music singing, heavily tattooed and pierced crazy man who ran his own private zoo filled with hundreds and at times thousands of wild cats, meaning tigers and lions, which he used to play with and interact with nonstop. And the people who came to his zoo could do likewise. You paid a big fee and you got to actually play with lions and tigers and cubs. And this was an enormous business for him. Just to see the business itself and him is to not even believe that these things exist in the world. And yet, things are much crazier than that in this series, because Joe Exotic got himself into a feud with a woman named Carol Baskin, who objected to this sort of exploitation of wild animals, which shouldn't be used in this sort of monetized way. Of course, Baskin herself was monetizing her own cats, but we'll set aside the hypocrisy there. And they had this feud, and eventually it led to a murder-for-hire plot where Joe Exotic tried to have this woman executed. That's crazy, but there's so much more. There's so much more. There's polygamy. There's arson. There's all sorts of craziness, reality television stuff. I've never seen a show where I kept laughing through the whole thing just from pure disbelief. So if you're looking for something, I know this is a time right now where everybody is at home. They're getting really bored. If they're not bored, they're immensely stressed about the news, which is just constantly delivering bad stuff to us. If you're looking for an escape, just a total escapist thing to just, you know, enter into and have, you know, your time and your attention distracted for 7 hours, I mean, you really can't do better than Tiger King.
It sounds good to me. I think I'll watch that one with the kids are asleep. Another one, this is an 8-part Netflix show from Austria called Freud. I think we know who this is about.
We do. It is about Sigmund Freud, the father of psychoanalysis. And yes, it is an 8-part dramatic series. It's an Austrian series. And it's about the young Sigmund Freud as he is attempting to make his name for himself in the medical field, which is a difficult process for him because he has these, at the time, you know, in the 19th century, revolutionary ideas about treating people with what they dubbed hysteria. Most doctors thought that, at the time, thought that hysteria was a condition that came, that could be treated via the treatment of organs, meaning there was some physical, you know, basis for these things. You would treat the neck or the head or something like that, an organ to treat mental conditions, whereas Freud, of course, thought that there were psychological elements that needed to be treated in a unique way. That means that the show definitely has some historical basis. But just like with Tiger King, although certainly not as crazy as Tiger King because nothing is, Freud is a really pulpy work of historical fiction. The story winds up involving Freud getting mixed up with a series of murders, which he attempts to solve. It eventually leads to a big conspiracy that has political elements to it and that involves a lot of mind control. It involves a demon that's possessing people. It certainly is a show that begins in fact and then just goes wildly into fantasy. I actually found that that veering off into craziness was what made the show so much fun. Certainly Freud is an interesting character, but there's no reason for an 8-part dramatic biopic of Freud's life. And here, what's so good is that the show sort of winds up using real stuff about Freud for really pulpy, fun, thrillerish means. So again, it's the kind of thing that is a nice distraction. It doesn't take itself overly seriously. It's almost more fun when it tries to, you know, blend stuff about the id and the superego and the Oedipus complex into these totally ridiculous scenarios involving, as I said, demons and satanic rituals. It's another one that, you know, people are starved for some new entertainment, and you know, Netflix is so good at delivering shows that, you know, you can really lose yourself in. This is another solid one if you're looking for that.
Well, that sounds very interesting. And coming up, one more thing. We've got one called Dark Side of the Ring. I can't wait for Nick to share this one. I mean, this just great stuff here. And another one called Big Time Adolescence. It's all coming your way next. This is the CGP.
You're listening to the Christopher Gabriel Program on 940 ESPN. More of the Christopher Gabriel Program right now on 940 ESPN.
Retro Bumper Friday house band, the Commodores. We're talking with Nick Shager, Elite Film Mind, Variety, Daily Beast, Yahoo Movies, and Esquire. Dark Side of the Ring. This is a second season of a show. Wrestling is at the center of it, and boy, I'll tell you what, I always wonder what a guy like Vince McMahon would think about these.
Yeah, you know, Vince McMahon certainly can't be thrilled that this show exists, but it's really, you know, due to the fact that wrestling has had a really storied history of tragedies. I'm somebody who grew up really loving professional wrestling. I grew up at a time when the WWE, which was then the WWF, was a big deal. And, you know, it was a formative part of my childhood. I don't really watch it anymore, but Dark Side of the Ring is a trip back in time to some of wrestling's most notorious real-life stories. The first season, which, like the second season, was on Vice TV, dealt with a whole number of stories, whether it was there was one about Randy Savage and Miss Elizabeth, there was another about the Von Erich family and their terrible tragedies. And it's a reality show that, to some extent, is a little tabloidy. I mean, it is a look into sad, tragic stories of crime and misfortune and, unfortunately, sometimes death. And the second season is certainly no different. The season premieres on Tuesday, and it premieres with certainly season two's biggest story, which is that of Chris Benoit. Chris Benoit, I think many people remember because it was only 13 years ago in 2007 when it was discovered that he had not only taken his own life, but first taken the life of his wife and his 7-year-old son. And that double murder homicide, double murder suicide, was a stunning turn of events for a guy who had been such a successful wrestler. This this season premiere, which is a two-hour season premiere, it's basically a feature-length documentary, really does a good job of painting a portrait of him and how he came to this horrific final fate, because the guy was, for the most part, known as a quiet, loyal, dedicated family man and just diligent, hard worker. No one would have ever suspected such a thing for most of his life, but a series of events, I think the show persuasively argues, sent him down a really bad path, including the death of his very close friend, Eddie Guerrero, another celebrated wrestler who died extremely young at 38 over heart issues after having had a lot of substance abuse problems. And then also, as the show argues, when Benoit did this horrific thing, immediately the response was that it had been done because of steroids, because he had had such elevated testosterone levels in his body. But the show makes the case, as others did in the aftermath of this tragedy, that CTE played a big part in changing his, sort of mental state. This was a guy who really became somebody else, and obviously it led to horrific things. It's an eye-opening story about, wrestling's, problems when they blend real life and fantasy too much, and also about the toll a lot of these sports, whether it's wrestling or football or whatnot, the toll that steroids and that CTE play. And it's a little disconcerting. And, even as somebody who really loves wrestling, I mean, it makes you think that there are big underlying problems with sports like this or sports entertainment like this. And so, yeah, if you're into that sort of thing, if you really like wrestling and if you remember these stories, it's a fascinating series to take a peek at.
And that sounds good. And we have about a minute left. Give us the lowdown on Big Time Adolescence with Pete Davidson. Of course, we know Pete from Saturday Night Live.
Yeah, Big Time Adolescence was a big festival hit at Sundance last year, I believe. And then this year it got a small theatrical release a couple of weeks ago. Obviously no one's seeing it that way now, but fortunately it was always planned to premiere on Hulu this weekend, and so it's out today. It's a very sort of straightforward and sweet coming-of-age story about a young teenage kid who attempts to woo a girl that he's interested in, but he also has this friend who is this 20-something-year-old college dropout slacker played by Pete Davidson, and Davidson is the real draw here. He's very good as that sort of bad influence, that sort of going-nowhere guy who gets in the way of this kid's life, even though this kid idolizes him. It's not a great movie, but again, people are trapped inside, and there's nothing wrong with the movie. It's just a little slight. So if you're looking for a comedy and you like Pete Davidson, he's particularly good in this.
Folks, somebody who is way beyond particularly good is my guy Nick Shager. You can find all of his reviews very easily. They all sort of populate on his Twitter page, and you can find Nick at NSCHAGER. Great stuff. Of course, Nick, Daily Beast, Variety, Yahoo Movies, and Esquire. Nick, always a great pleasure. Stay well, and we will talk with you next week.
Yeah, everybody stay safe. You too, Christopher. We'll talk next week.
Fantastic. Nick is just nobody better. Just nobody better. My thanks to Nick Shager and to Trey Wallace and to Matt Johnson and Nick Papagni and our encore of the week, Kate Scott. Just want to remind you of this, that in times like this, when it is just very frustrating and it's chaotic and it's confusing, as we've had as a theme the entire week, we just have to keep pulling together. As much as we are doing social distancing, being safe, being at least 6 feet apart, we want to make sure that we stay emotionally connected. Call your mom, call your dad, call your grandparents, play some board games with your kids at home, watch a movie, and just sit around the table and have some meals and talk. It's not a bad way to go. My thanks, as always, to the man who keeps the program running in the right direction, Gonzo. Great work, as always. Braves hat and all, even despite your mayonnaise on the hot dog. Just really troubling. You need to have a long talk with your parents. Folks, have a terrific weekend. Get out and take a walk in the neighborhood, and we'll talk to you on Monday at 3:05. Until then, you're on your own.
your home of the Los Angeles Lakers. 940 ESPN, the Valley's local sports leader, KFIG Fresno.